This is Michael Veazey from Amazing FBA, and today I want to continue my mindset thoughts on travel. And today we're going to talk about vehicles. What can that do for us as a metaphor in business and in life? Stay tuned. Hi, I'm Michael Veazey from Amazing FBA, and I'm the leader of the 10K Collective Mastermind for private label sellers and product brand owners who sell at least $500,000 a year or more on Amazon. Over the last 5 years, we've had members triple their revenue in 1 year, grow to 8 figures, and one member get to a 7-figure exit. Hooray! Now we're taking it to the next level. I'm excited to introduce the 10K Collective Uber Mastermind. It's a unique combination of peer group support in person and online and specialist coaching. If you're ready to take your business to 7 figures and beyond, just go to theamazonmastermind.com to find out more today. Hey folks, I'm currently driving a car and this makes my thoughts turn to travel and specifically within this mini series about travel and mindset lessons for business and life. I'm going to talk about vehicles or things that get you from A to B. Obviously that applies in the real physical world and it applies in as a metaphor for wealth as well. Today, I'm a bit like the milk tray man. If you remember the milk tray man from the 80s, showing your age if you do, then he was a man. Sorry to be sexist, but he used to dress up in black and act like a secret agent, jumping out of trains and into cars and scaling buildings and crashing through windows on some kind of harness and then rappelling back out of the window, all to deliver a milk tray. And the tagline was all because a lady loves milk tray. By the way, side note, what a brilliant piece of advertising. That brand name and that product has stuck in my mind like a splinter because of a really powerful story, which was kind of cheesy and everyone enjoyed sharing. But I feel a bit like the milk tray man sometimes. Today is a case in point. So I'm driving a car from a rental property that I own that needed some work on today to Bristol, where I am going to leave the car, get on my folding bike, get on a train. At the other end of it, I'm going to get off in London, cycle on my folding bike, having unfolded it, of course, and then probably finish off with a playful bit of underground trip, or rather the other way around, I suspect. And then I'll finally be staying with some friends. And then eventually tomorrow, because there's a train strike, I've got to do some work in London tomorrow. And then I will eventually jump on a bike and then get on a train and then get on a bike on the other end. And then I'll get back home. Whew, exhausting just to think about it. Well, is that rational? Why am I using so many vehicles? Couldn't I have just used a car? Yes and no. There's a reason for it. And sometimes it turns out there is a right vehicle for a right purpose at a certain time and place and the wrong vehicle for it. And that applies literally if you're thinking about logistics, vehicles, and broadly speaking, forms of transport to move goods and services is also quite complex. And I'm moving myself around in order to deliver myself one-to-one to decent services tomorrow. And if you're moving bulk cargo or a lot of widgets that you're going to sell on e-commerce, same sort of thing applies. It's also a metaphor for financial vehicles, which is used often as a metaphor. I think we'll talk about this, the right financial vehicle for you to increase your wealth in investing. So let's take those couple of metaphors because those are pretty productive, particularly for anyone who's in e-commerce. Let's be literal-minded at first. A lot of people are a little bit literal-minded. They don't really like metaphors or they kind of go from metaphor to literal. So let's be literal for a second. A lot of people don't give enough thought to vehicles or means of moving stuff from A to B in their business logistics. If you are lumping everything together and you leave it to somebody to just solve for you, you may not be thinking about your supply chain, which is a broad abstract sounding name, but a lot of it means moving things from A to B and not just finished widgets either. The truth of international trade is that a lot of trade these days relies on intermediate products being shipped. So for example, you might get plastics from a plastic factory. So the raw materials might be oil. Oil goes into so many products. It's not just a means of moving things. You might get oil moved from, say, the Gulf of Saudi Arabia or the Middle East to a plastics factory in China. You might then get the raw plastic moved to a factory in China that makes physical widgets. And that's what you think of as the beginning of your product's journey, but it is not. Then those products are going to be probably moved by truck to a port, be loaded via a crane, which is kind of a vehicle, only very swift, but a critical one. And indeed the human hand into a boat, Then thence it will be loaded into a container, of course, first. Be containerized, maybe at the port, probably. Then the container will be swung onto a ship. Then the ship will go from, say, Shenzhen or some East China port as a classic example, to Port of LA in America as a classic example. This is obviously not the only option in the world for goods, but it's one of the most well-used and biggest ones. And then thence it will be taken out of the ship, and the container will be shunted over to a container park somewhere. And sometimes it'll be left for a long time if it's very busy. It will be then deconsolidated. If you like, your stuff will be taken out if it's been mixed with other people's stuff. If not mixed, then maybe you just own the container yourself. If you're shipping enough, thence it will be trucked to somewhere. It might be put on a railway, and you'll be taking it from there. So literally thinking through how your products move from vehicle to vehicle, or from thing that moves them to other thing that moves them, is really, really, really worthwhile. Because if you look into it in detail, you may discover that things are being moved inefficiently, or you're moving things twice when they could be moved once. And it could be as simple as, for example, if you inspect stuff when it arrives in the USA. Well, let me put it two or three ways. If you don't inspect your goods when they're coming out of China, you're on drugs. I'm just saying that, okay? Because quality control is not a given in China in the way that it might be within the European Union, at least in Western Europe, or certainly in America. So some things need steps that need adding into supply chains, and that's the most classic one. That's one example where you might want to add a step to your supply chain, but you may wish to remove steps. If you have, for example, been inspecting your goods on leaving China for a while, you may choose to trust your suppliers to do a good job and feel that you don't need to inspect as much as you used to. You may feel that you don't need to do a post-shipment inspection again. If you haven't done that, a lot of people don't. They ship from China and then they wonder why people are complaining about breakages. Well, guess what? It could be that things are breaking in transit from China to the USA, or from China to the UK, or from India to the UK, international freight. Or it could be that they're breaking somewhere else. But if you don't inspect, you're not going to know. So you may choose to, and I would advise you to, do a pre- and post-shipment inspection before you ship for the first time. But you may choose to skip on the post-shipment inspection once you have solved any problems. You've got well-packed and padded cartons. You may have changed the packaging so that it protects the products more, particularly if it's glass or something breakable, etc., etc. And eventually, you're going to get to the point where you can get rid of a part of the supply chains. Whatever you think of his public pronouncements on X or Twitter, or his treatment of Twitter, you've got to admit that Elon Musk is one of the most amazing engineers, and he says the best part is no part, which makes sense. If it's not there, it can't break, it can't be messed up, it isn't going to cost money, it isn't going to take time. So eliminating parts of the supply chain that are unnecessary, as long as they are unnecessary, can be one of the best ways to save money and time. Sometimes you might go the other way, but that's one example of vehicles, literally. Now, if we're thinking less literally and more metaphorically, then the financial vehicles are a classic thing in the investing world that people talk about as vehicles. So a wealth vehicle could be as simple as saving money, which is a very, very good start. It's a bit like walking. Walking is not a sophisticated way of moving, but it's a lot better than not moving anything, isn't it? So if you hand deliver your products, if you had a bakery in a local village back in the day and you sold bread, for example, then that might be a very viable option. Obviously, after a while, you might find that's very slow and laborious. So the next level up might be bicycle delivery, and you might find that the wealth equivalent of that might be investing in stocks and bonds, and it's exponentially more complex than just saving, requires more management and more keeping an eye, but people will often use bonds, particularly government-issued bonds, as part of a pension portfolio. Even the very grown-up, sophisticated pension funds will do that, and they will often have gilts, which are UK 10-year bonds, and treasuries, which I believe are a US treasury bond, treasuries US 10-year bonds. I'm not an expert in stock or bond investments, so do not follow any advice from me directly on that, but you get the idea. And in business, there are some equivalents as well. I mean, really, when you're looking at small business, there isn't any equivalent to the low risk and certainty of such investment vehicles that I just talked about, really. Investing in blue chips could be seen as like getting a train, so more complex still, but plugging into a known public thing. And then you could say that investing in individual companies and individual stock picking starts to be literally the same thing, right? So the skill of buying a business, investing in a business, or investing in part of a business is a different skill from running one, but they're very, very related. And if you develop the skill of thinking like an investor and thinking of your business as a wealth vehicle rather than just being a cash flow thing that you live off each month, hopefully, if it's working for you, then that's already a big step forward. Because the truth is, of course, that in the world of small businesses, particularly, that the percentage of money that you will take from the business when you sell it, if you sell it, is frightening. So in other words, running a small business makes a lot less money than selling a profitable small business. If you own a business for a handful of years, which a lot of people do in the e-commerce space at the moment that I work with anyway, and they're doing the sort of 7 to 8 figure range in revenue, selling a business normally will make you about 60% of all of the money you ever get out of the business ever. And that assumes that it's for cash flowing well. If you're really growing it aggressively, that's probably more skewed still. So in other words, thinking of the business as a wealth vehicle in itself is really important. But you can, of course, break the metaphor down and think of, right, is this the right vehicle for creating more cash flow? For example, if you look at your products as little mini vehicles of wealth, or indeed, are they reducing a wealth? Is a particular set of products a cash generator for you? It may not be growing that much. It may not, that sexy may not be highly profitable, but if it's making cash, it's particularly if you're doing something like reselling existing products, if you've got wholesale buying relationships, or even if you're doing good old retail arbitrage, then that could be a cash flow generator. But that's a vehicle for generating cash, not the same vehicle as generating a brand equity or something solid that you can be part of a business that's sellable. For example, so creating a private label product will be not be cash generating initially. It will take cash, but it could be a vehicle for growing the value of your business. You get the idea. So just again, these are simple concepts that you can play with. And I'm just beginning to sort of tease you with how you can use this metaphor of a vehicle in your business, but it's actually pretty profound. You're trying to go from A to B. First of all, as in goal routes questions, you've got to define where are you, where do you want to go, and how are you going to get there? And that's more like a sat nav question, if you will. And the vehicle question is, yeah, a subset of the how are we going to do that? What vehicle is suitable for that? And whether it's literally vehicles in your supply chain, moving physical widgets around the world, not just getting it to the warehousing, but fulfilling it as well. The last mile problem often involves people literally cycling on bikes. Or whether it's metaphorical and you're talking about wealth vehicles and you think of each product line as a wealth vehicle, or your business as a whole as a wealth vehicle. Again, the question arises, where are you now? Where do you want to go? And how are you going to get there? And which vehicle are you going to use? And how does that all fit together? Hope that's thought provoking. Thanks for listening. Speak to you soon. Hi, I'm Michael Veazey from Amazing FBA, and I'm the leader of the 10K Collective Mastermind. Masterminds for private label sellers and product brand owners who sell at least $500,000 a year or more on Amazon. Over the last 5 years, we've had members triple their revenue in 1 year, grow to 8 figures, and one member get to a 7-figure exit. Hooray! Now we're taking it to the next level. I'm excited to introduce the 10K Collective Uber Mastermind. It's a unique combination of peer group support in person and online, and specialist coaching. We give you everything you need to grow your business to high 7 figures and finally start to get that lifestyle you were promised when you went into this. You'll get clear plans from world-class specialists on things like intellectual property law, e-commerce, image and video marketing, financial engineering, and paid advertising, to name but a few. You'll create bulletproof plans to survive the recession. You'll double check with your peers that they make sense, and then you'll make a plan to make a killing on the rebound. Most importantly, you will actually transform your business. You'll create listings that convert, build a brand that connects, and get premium pricing. You'll learn the latest advertising hacks and master stock management, as well as avoiding Amazon curveballs. Above all, you will create a big, bold 3-year plan for a 7-figure exit. And unlike other programs, we don't just hype you up and then abandon you. You'll have your peers in the mastermind giving you insights from their own businesses and keeping you on track through peer accountability and a little bit of friendly competition. And we'll also have those experts double checking everything you do makes actual sense. If you finally want to start becoming the entrepreneur you've always known you can be, if you're ready to take your business to 7 figures and beyond, go to theamazonmastermind.com to find out more today.